Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. Gary Salyer, and we will be talking about his new book, Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve. After Dr. Salyer's first divorce, he vowed that his next marriage would be different. So when his second marriage crumbled almost a decade later for nearly the same reasons, he was devastated. He felt like an utter, complete failure. But rather than give in, he was determined to find another way. He dedicated himself to doing the deep research about all things love. He read, researched, furthered his education in the field, talked to experts, and to people he loved. Most of all, he did the deep transformation work that unlocked his heart and released his soul to love as he had always imagined. Love, and how to make it lasting, became his life's highest calling, not just for himself, but others. In so doing, he has developed a powerful and effective methodology to make it safe to love again for those who may have even given up on hope. Based on a field of study called attachment theory, a science of intimate relationships, Dr. Salyer's insights have a profound and oftentimes immediate impact. As a transformational relationship mentor, he helps people rewrite the rules for love in their brains. He empowers singles to reclaim their rights for a full soulmate relationship. With couples, he helps resolve their conflicts and differences so that they can have the love they dream about. Because of his innovative new approach that rewires brains for secure love, singles and couples experience deep, lasting shifts that happen in easy, natural ways. Therapists are even saying his new approach will, quote, change the way therapists do therapy. As the author of Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve, Dr. Salyer also offers experiential, interactive programs through his Safe to Love Again workshop and Extraordinary Couples and Extraordinary Singles retreats. For more information, you can visit his website, which is GarySalyer.com, and that's GarySalyer.com. And so with that, I'd like to welcome Gary to the show. Good day, sir.
Thank you, Robert. I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. One of the things that I've done this show now for a little about 8.5 years, and often we'll get callers, whenever I have topics of love and relationships, I'll often have people call in where, you know, it seems to be very elusive to some people, and, you know, they often do give up on love, and, you know, and it's a sad thing. So I'm hoping that today's show will inspire those who are listening to love again. So I'd like to start with first, what was the inspiration? I like to talk about inspiration. So what was the inspiration for you writing this book?
Well, you know, it's funny. The immediate one is I had a lot of clients and friends who were therapists and people who've been in my workshops. I said, you've got to put this in a book. But before that, it really goes back to when I was a kid and growing up in a very dysfunctional alcoholic family. I remember being 7 and just kind of noticing, wow, a lot of people don't really love each other. And I swore I'd never be miserable and divorced. So when I went to college, and I was like the first in 7 generations to finish from high school, I decided this was my holy grail in life. So I did 2 majors, psychology, religion, said, I'm going to make sure that Everything was in place for me to never have a divorce. And then my senior year, professor calls me into his office and says, hey, we want you to do a personality test. I go, sure. I do the test. A few days later, go into his office. And then the next thing I know is he's saying, just as I leave the office, he says, oh, by the way, you have a 90% chance of having a divorce. And I was floored. I mean, grenades going off. Couldn't have sounded worse. So I literally, within 2 hours, delayed graduation and went a fifth year of college to get a third degree in marriage and family. So, you know, I graduated, whew, dodged that bullet, except this one has kind of a U-turn bullet. And 12 years later, you know, my wife says she wants a divorce. And I'm like, I don't get it. I did the work. So after that divorce, I was bound and determined. This time, I do workshops, I read books, and I do over 7 years of therapy. And I go, good, I'm good to go. I get married a second time, and lo and behold, 4 years later, I'm divorced. And I do more therapy. And then I find out, I begin to notice that I'm still picking the same type of people. And I began to notice that I was showing up as Mr. Wrong. And I said, this thing, while therapy did me a lot of good, it did not change my core style of relating and picking partners. It has me managing my pain. And then I said, nobody should work this hard to not have lasting. And so I just said, if they can't crack the code, I will. And I devoted the rest of my life to finding out what will have a brain, change a brain, so that it functions like the people and acts and picks and chooses, just like all these people that have these beautiful, lasting relationships. And when you see them out having dinner together, they're gazing into each other's eyes 20, 25 years into the marriage. That's what inspired me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the growing up in an environment of alcoholism in the family, I had that as well. So, I mean, I understand very much, you know, the what I saw, you know, what love wasn't, what I thought was love, but it clearly wasn't, and it really, you know, did wire my brain, you know, at that particular point as to, you know, what I was going to experience later on, and I think that's a very common experience for people who, you know, grow up in families, you know, that where alcoholism or any kind of addiction is part of the equation.
Oh yeah, I mean, my senior in high school, my mother loved soap operas, right? And I just couldn't stand because it reminded me of everything I saw in the family, right? And I made some smart aleck remark my junior year in high school, and she goes, Gary, when you grow up, you'll find out that life is just like this. And I remember looking at her and saying, then you can shoot me now, you know, because this is not going to be. But yet, when you're in an alcoholic family, let's face it, the rules get topsy-turvy. You're dying to know what really works. I still remember at 7, I had a dream of being at the bottom of a well, and the light was way above me, and all I wanted was to find the light. That dream of finding the light, and I remember being 7 thinking about this dream and thinking one day after about 2 weeks, just a little 7-year-old, second grade, thinking, whatever my folks are and my family are, I think the truth is the opposite way. And I did everything opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, and for parents out there listening, you know, it's really important. I mean, you know, 7-year-old, I mean, that's pretty heavy thinking for a 7-year-old, you know. But you know, that's the experience. And you know, I think parents who whose relationship isn't a loving one, you know, would do good to heed that, you know, that warning that their young ones, you know, pick up on that lack of love or that tension or that dysfunction. And it's important to work on the relationship not only for themselves, but also for the sake of their children's future lives.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the part of our brain that's always seven is our relationship brain. Your limbic system, your attachment brain, what I write about in the brain, stays at about 5 years old. And there are psychologists that if they interview families, they'll pay more attention to what a 4, 5, or 6-year-old says because they're too young to lie about it, and that they're smart enough to know what the real deal is. And 7-year-olds, 5-year-olds, they always know that. In fact, when I'm working with couples, sometimes couples will get into talking about their pain. I remember one woman was talking about she had done a lot of transformation, and she says, you know, your vibration really just doesn't fit my vibration, and my vortex and yours aren't connecting, and we're having this really vibrational mismatch. And she goes on for a couple minutes, and I finally, he's lost, I don't know what this is, and I finally say, could you say that the way a 5-year-old would? And she goes, I just want a playmate. Suddenly, you get the, it's like he relaxes. It's like the clue bus just came by. Oh, that's what vibration means. I can do that. The 5-year-old in us knows the truth. And it's the, and if you're out there listening and you start describing your pain and it sounds too heady, just say it the way a 5-year-old, and that's your would, and that's your truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, what did writing this book teach you about love?
Wow, a lot of things. What I began to ask was, you know, what is it? What's the core difference in people's brains, and actually who create, pick and choose and maintain a lasting, loving relationship that's really positive, and those of us that didn't? And what I found out, that when you study attachment theory, there was this original experiment where they separated children from their mothers for about 3 minutes at ages 1 to 1.5. And based on how the child reacted when the mom came back in the room, they found out they were basically 3 core love styles. They call them attachment styles, that will track the rest of their life, the way they relate to people. The first were the secure babies, who were calmed down very soon, and they grew up to be people who are comfortable loving and being loving, to be loved and to love to love back. They were comfortable depending and being depended upon. They pick and they create long-lasting relationships. Then there were the other two. Some babies would get really upset and never calm down. These became the anxious. As adults, their worst fears, when does love go away? And they have a fight response, trying to lock it down. So where were you last night? You know, why didn't you text me back in 10 minutes? All those things. And then there were the other babies that just kept playing and didn't even notice that mom came back. These became your avoidant babies. They grew up to be Mr. and Ms. I won't commit, or Mr. and Ms. I'm emotionally unavailable. They are afraid of being depended on and depending on anybody. They have a very dismissive reaction to emotions, so they won't attune to you. And we found they was tracked. So by one, your brain knows whether you're loved or not. And I asked myself, so whatever tells that baby's brain they're loved is what adults are using, because it tracks the rest of their life. And at one, you know, babies don't have stories, they don't have limiting beliefs, they're not using logic. They're not using, you know, big explanations. There's only one thing up and running on one: feelings, just feelings. And then I ask, what's the question? And after a lot of research, there are 4 key feelings that tell a baby they are well loved or not. And those feelings are our brain's natural GPS. And if we tie into that, if we use that, it's way better than all the other relation advice. Those feelings are: have I been welcomed with joy in this relationship? Am I worthy and nourished to reach out and get my needs met? Am I cherished and protected? And that means I get to be a me, I get to be my full me, but not by myself. I get to be in an empowering, supportive we. So it's a me in a we that's really empowering, so you know you have a home port in your beloved's heart. even as you explore, and then empowered with choice, so you have a voice and you can create your own experience. Those four feelings, welcomed, worthy, cherished, empowered, that's what tell the secure, and they are looking for those feelings back. They don't. That's why they don't choose bad partners. They're looking for the four feelings, and they give them. That's why they create. And if you were giving any other feeling, like unwelcomed, unworthy, uncherished, or disempowered, the bug in the system is the brain will use that to pick and choose too. And then you're always finding Mr. Wrong or Ms. Wrong. Then you're doing things in relationships that undermine. So whatever those feelings you got, if you got any of the others like unwelcomed, unworthy, uncherished, and disempowered, the key is to get your brain to feel the real ones, welcomed, worthy, cherished, and protected. If you can feel them deep inside your bones, then your brain picks and creates lasting love. That's the theory.
Wow. There is so much there.
there is.
Let me, I guess, let's start with the feelings, you know, because, and then we'll go to the three different kind of reactions. So with a, when you're talking about a child who's like one, what are the behaviors? I mean, how is it that a one-year-old would be able to internalize or feel, you know, those particular aspects, the welcomed, you know, worthy, cherished, and empowered? I mean, what are the actions that a parent would do to demonstrate that, you know, and then obviously, you know, if they don't, you know, that's where they're not showing. So how would they,
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'll do you one better. I'll go with childhood and I'll show you how it shows up as an adult in relationships.
Okay, great.
Okay? Cool. So welcome with joy. First few couple of months of life. Oh, there's a little rabbit. We're so glad to have you. Ooh, there's a little rabbit. That's welcome with joy. Right?
Okay.
Now, as an adult, that's like when you get up in the morning and you look at your beloved and you go, good morning, gorgeous. You know. Or when they're coming home from night and you know, at night after a hard day and you see that downtrodden view and you go, come here, honey. It looks like you need a hug. It's when you light up with joy when you see them and you can see the big smile that you are welcomed in their life and they're happy to see you. That's welcome with joy, okay? Worthy and nourished is when, you know, the little one reaches out for their needs and the mom and the dad make attuned responses. Oh, they don't just let them cry in the crib forever and ever. They come. And they find out, is it the binky you want or you want the bottle? And they're making a track of what you need. And it's okay to reach out. And you know they're going to respond. And so it's okay to take all that nourishment in, that beautiful blanket or whatever, that bottle. Now, as an adult, it comes out to it's okay to reach out and ask as well and to give as well as receive. And you expect your beloved to make mental notes of whether you like tea or coffee and what you get at Starbucks, right? Or they know who your friends are. They know what your dreams are. They're making what's called love maps. And it's perfectly okay. So there's a balance of giving and receiving that feels good and they've got you. And your needs, and they're there for you. Cherished and protected. That's when the little one becomes a toddler. Remember when the little one becomes a toddler, and for the first time they notice their self. Now, if you know anything about toddlers, they want to play by themselves in the room, but they don't want you out of the room. They want to make sure you're there. You walk out of the room, and they're going, wah, right? Because they know they want separation and supervision. They want to know someone's got their back. They want to know that someone's looking over them. I remember there was a game between me and my son when he was that age. He would get to the top of the stairs and then start giggling. And it was a game of, let's see if Dad still runs track. You know?
Uh-huh.
And he learned he was cherished and protected. Now, as an adult, what that means is we get to be a me. We don't have to give up our beliefs, you know, our religion. We get to create our own experience, and they are there for our dreams. They're tracking our dreams actively, and they're supporting us. We get to go out and do our life and come home to a to what's called a safe haven. We know we have a home port in their life. They're there to support our dreams. And the contract is, I will be here to be a we with you. We will co-create together, and we will share influence together. And I am here to make sure that you will be your best self, but you still have my arms to come home to. And then Empowered with Choice is more about, do they share influence with you? Is it okay for you to have your experience while I have mine? Most couples, when they get in the fight, say, you can't think that about me. Oh, yeah, they can. They have a right to the experience. They just have to deal with it differently. And it's okay. You have voice. It's okay to speak up and to have your own wins so that both people have wins. Now, that's what Empowered looks like, you know, for both the little ones. And when you get all four of those feelings, welcomed, worthy, cherished, and empowered, then you get the feeling I'm loved and I can love and be loved. That's the bonus, right? So these four feelings, what I do is I tell all of my couples, if you want to know where you're at in your relationship, track them. 1 to 10, if you're out there and you're listening to this, 1 to 10, this week in my relationship, did I feel welcomed with joy? 1 to 10, did I feel worthy and nourished to have my needs met? 1 to 10, did I feel cherished and protected? There's a we that I can depend upon. I still get to be me. And 1 to 10, I felt empowered with choice. Anything under a 7 is something that needs worked on. And most couples get it. You go with the feelings. Now you're matching your brain's original attachment system instead of doing list of, you know, compatibility or whatever you're using.
Oh, very interesting. Now, the worthy aspect, I just want to touch on that just a second, because when you were talking about a child crying and responding to their need, kind of recognizing, mm-hmm. identifying what the need is and responding. I don't know how many times I've heard, parents say, just let them cry, they need to learn, and it seems to me that the idea of being worthy of love in adulthood seems to be a real stickler for some folks. As an adult, you have that feeling that, you're not worthy of that, that love. How do you start to rewire your brain, to recognize that, in fact, that is something that is, something that you deserve?
Okay. Well, you've hit on one of my favorite themes, and that's worthiness, because right now we have an epidemic of unworthiness and people that don't feel deserving of love. People have this idea that, and we get it naturally. That's the key thing here. Think about it. Online search engines, we got these long lists of of things we're choosing. Is he 6'2"? Is he six figures? Does he do Pilates? Oh,
check all the boxes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and hikes, and oh my God, he does yoga, right? And it goes the way same for women, Now, what we know is with all those long lists that everybody has to match up with, for fear of missing out, nobody. Who matches up to all those things? It makes us feel like, we have to be walking Hallmark cards or something. And then we feel unworthy. And it's creating an epidemic of unworthiness. And then you just add the ghosting on there that's so rampant. Are people texting endlessly if they're singles and they're online? Well, what am I, chopped liver is what I've heard women say before. So there's a lot in our culture going on at the moment that's not telling us we're worthy. And so, and the worst thing about worthiness, when you feel unworthy, you eventually become and feel a little hopeless. And I'll tell you how that works. When you keep having these relationships where you feel unworthy, then the brain says, I'm tired of the pain. And it begins to change your perceptual filters so that you don't notice when the good ones come, when there's a candidate for love. It deletes it so you don't get in a relationship and get hurt again. And then you feel hopeless. You go, there's no good ones out there. That's, every time I hear hopelessness, I know there's a filter deleting all the good ones. And because they're afraid they will get hurt again. So where there's undeserving and not enough, there's also hopelessness. And the key is to do the deep work so you know that you're truly worthy, that you know that, and you can feel it. Now, when you feel it, it's not just about being in your head. This is to do some really, really deep work. That's what I do with my clients, where we find the exact moment their brain learned to feel unworthy, usually in childhood, to be honest, sometimes in a previous relationship. And we get the brain to really get safe with feeling worthy again and to feel it in their bones. So that becomes their reference feeling for life and love. For instance, can I go on for one more minute? Is that okay?
Please. Oh, yeah, please. Because actually, we've got a listener in the chat room who was saying that, you know, that is something that she's dealing with, and so anything you can provide is definitely helpful.
Oh, yeah. Okay, say, like, for instance, with one of the people I discuss in the book, her name's Gwen, in the book, when she reached out as a little child to her mom and dad had been divorced, and she asked for an ice cream cone on a visitation day with dad. And out of his great resentment for the divorce, he pulled out a wad of $100 bills and says, this is what you cost me. She learned, I'm not worthy, and she had to pay for love. That was how she internalized it. So she stopped reaching out. She stopped, and when she stopped, and she kept reaching out for men that didn't make her feel worthy, didn't meet her needs, because she had a feeling of unworthy. And the brain always uses the feeling and has to pick and choose. So she was picking people to give her the same feeling, because that's what these feelings do. They act as a reference. When we swapped out that feeling of unworthy that she came by naturally, you know, for worthy, because do you want to reach out again? Is it safe to reach out again? No, the brain never, you know, takes a bad deal just to say, I want to screw with my master today. It pulled that off the menu of reaching out for her needs because it wasn't safe back then. That's why I called the book Safe to Love Again, you know. So the brain always takes the best deal available. She was always attracted to married men, and she couldn't figure out why, because married men aren't going to meet your needs. She was, you know, her brain was using unworthy. And when you swap that out, then, and you feel truly worthy, your brain says, it just doesn't mess with people that make it feel unworthy. That was the key for her. And whatever feeling's missing, you can restore it, and you can have the love of your life that doesn't treat you in the same old way.
Wow. Gosh, we're actually halfway through the show, Gary, already. I'm going to take just a quick break because I do want to invite listeners, if they would like to call in with questions, they can call in at 619-789-4359. And again, those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions you'd like for me to ask, feel free to post them. And then when we come back from break, I want to kind of explore the we've kind of mentioned it a couple times about picking the right person, and you know, and how do we select or recognize, you know, who that one is? Because some of us have experience with not picking the right one. So let's go ahead and explore that when we come back. Okay.
Sounds great.
Yeah, great. Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello. This is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is Dr. Gary Salyer, and we're talking about his new book, Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve. And again, you can find out more about all he has to offer by visiting his website, which is GarySalyer.com, and that's GarySalyer.com. Okay, so we're back, Gary.
We're back.
Yes, we're back. Yes, this is very interesting. The comment in the chat room is flying by, and I always recognize that as it's a really good conversation. So, picking the right one. Now, this would obviously be for those people out there who are single, who have had difficulty in finding and maintaining a lasting, loving relationship. First of all, with attachment theory, you know, the secure, the anxious and the avoiding, the secure probably have a better chance of finding and selecting and maintaining that loving mm-hmm. relationship. And then those who are anxious and who avoid it obviously probably have difficulties with that. So what are the ingredients that go into, I guess, let's start with the selecting. You know, for those who are out there dating, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, those checking those boxes, you know, that people may have as a prerequisite to, you know, to a relationship being limiting. So how would one who has had difficulty maybe switch it up and do something different?
Okay. That's a great question. If you're online, you know, we know from research that compatibility is not a predictor of lasting. A little bit of compatibility is needed, I'll grant you that, you know, but these long lists, they don't predict. What predicts is the quality of what's called the marital friendship, you know, the relationship. And for me, that's these four feelings I'm talking about. The really good masters of relationships, they're good at welcoming each other, making each other feel worthy, making each other feel cherished, and making each other feel empowered. Now, so online is not a dating site. It's an introduction site. We should make that very, very clear. You don't date online. And so what you want to do is, after you've done some initial selection, you want to meet them. And it's okay if you really, here's a little tip, you can meet them on Skype for 15 or 20 minutes and get another, you know, before you go out. But when you go out, notice the four feelings. Are they making you feel welcomed and worthy and cherished and protected? If they're very, very late and, you know, that you text them or you email them and you get a response back a week later, how much welcome or joy is there in that?
Yeah.
Right?
Not very responsive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, or if they call up and say, you know, something came up. Maybe it did. But how worthy is that? How cherished is that? There's, you know, and just start noticing how you feel in your body with these four feelings. Those feelings are your predictor. I had a client that started working together in the first session. He goes, I went online and I've hit the jackpot already. I go, good. Tell me about Mr. Jackpot. And Mr. Jackpot was a doctor, and he was over 6'2", and he was good looking, and he loved a hike and some other things, right? Well, turned out after about 3-4 weeks, she goes, I don't feel worthy. I don't feel cherished in this relationship. He's always working. He's always doing other things, and I'm always getting rescheduled. She eventually, and what was her missing feeling? She didn't feel worthy. And she didn't, and in her child, she had way more right to separate than to ever belong to the family, so she never felt cherished. She picked, her brain used that. When we do the work and we get our brain to accept that it's okay to feel worthy again, it's okay to feel cherished, to give her brain a better deal, to upgrade the old deal, that was there to keep her safe as a little one. And now she's using all four of these feelings. The day comes where she's going out and she meets a guy who's a lawyer and he's 6'2". The other guy is, he's a good guy. But he comes out in a Hawaiian shirt. He's a little pudgy and he's a little bald, but over the course of the next month, he makes her feel great. So welcomed, so worthy, so cherished and empowered. She looked at me, she goes, you're right. If you use your feelings, this is a no-brainer. That's the difference between the list and using your brain's natural GPS that's been online since one. We just got to have the wisdom and the access so that we can, and that brain, part of our brain, knows when we're loved. It doesn't lie to us. We just use our feelings.
I have a friend who is now in the process of dating, after going through a divorce and replaying words with friends. And she is taken to keeping me updated on her, her search for a relationship. And it's, it's interesting, the people that she has met so far, the men she has met so far, when I put her comments in the context of those feelings, it's like she's striking out. She ends up leaving like the first day, and she'll communicate, and then she's doing the online and meeting, online for a while, checking to see if there's, compatibility. And then doing, the first date and, public areas, all the, all the kind, those kinds of things. But the men that she has so far come into contact with really just don't give her that feeling of welcomed and worthiness, and that is something that was certainly missing in her marriage, she's, real sensitive to that and, recognizing that, this is going nowhere kind of thing. So, luckily, she's been able to tap into those feelings, recognize those feelings as being, important. So when it comes to, finding that love, she's, I believe, in her 50s or 60s. It doesn't matter the age, right? I mean,
no.
whether you're in your 20s or your 80s, finding love with those, keeping attention on those four different feelings, those areas of feelings, is really going to be the key to finding something lasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. She, in her divorce, in her marriage, I should say, she didn't feel very worthy. She didn't feel very cherished, right?
Correct.
Almost always, that goes back. to 0 to 3, or maybe 0 to 7, sometimes to an early relationship. And, I mean, put it like this. My first divorce, what I didn't realize is that when I was a kid, you know, I had a mother who had borderline personality disorder. Now, that meant she was mentally ill, and she could be violently so. Now, do you want to belong to that? You want to belong? You want to be close in that? No. No, the best place was to be in your room. The best place was to be outside. So I learned it was safer to separate than to belong. Better to have my own back, pull myself up from my bootstraps, and be a really good me. Not so much on the we, where you feel cherished. So when I got in the relationship with my wife, you know, there was a part of me that didn't feel safe being in a we. And I couldn't get why she felt, I loved her dearly, but I was always doing my own thing, always being, and there was some part that was constantly separating because that was the template I learned. That was what was safe. And I never understood why she said, I feel lonely.
Mm.
You know, for now, I've seen that play out in many couples. I had one couple, and I discussed them in the book. They're called Todd and Jennifer. She had a very similar experience. Dad was alcoholic, I believe it was, and she had way more right to separate. It was just the best place, but she was dying to get into and be a we. So she was anxious. He also, his mother was very intrusive. Now the funny thing here is he had so much we that he wanted to get away. Always, because he didn't have a chance to be a me. The joke in the family was at a party, you could tell where mom was because she was always invading people's space so much that they'd be walking backwards. You see, he was walking backwards in the room, and
wow.
There's mom.
Wow.
Right? Okay, so his worst nightmare is someone who wants to be close. Her worst nightmare is someone who wants to be separate. So this is their little dance. She has no right to belong. He has no right to separate. They had the same missing right, just split differently, and thus the constant. She comes in the first session and says, I want to be a we. And his idea is, what do you mean a we? There's just two me's here.
Mm.
Now, the good thing his brain got when it took a we off the menu at 4 was, hey, I can get to be a me, you know, and that's, so it takes that off. He came by it naturally. And when she's fighting for a we, that's the first thing that, you know, so she had all right to separate too, because it wasn't really safe being there in the family. Now, when we gave her the right to truly belong, then she could calm down. And when we gave him a right to belong, then it was okay to create a we. Now they start circling up. So instead of being afraid of each other, they can love each other. And we just simply noticed that they came by it naturally. There are so many people out there. So if you're listening to this, whatever you're at, whether you're anxious or avoidant, your brain came by it naturally. It did the best. It took the best deal available. And all we want to do is upgrade that contract. It's like a security memo without a memo, without a date stamp. And we want to give it an expiration date so that you can be safe to love again. That's all it is, giving your brain a better deal.
Wow. So if a couple is, like that particular couple, excuse me, they obviously, it was a pattern. I mean, this was something
mm-hmm.
that obviously had gone on for a long period of time. And, you know, for each individually, it is something that they've lived with all of their lives. So how does a couple who have had a lifetime in their own little either anxious or avoiding kind of responses and patterns as a couple, how do they break out of that?
Okay. Well, the first was I got them to recognize their little dance. Like, oh, my God. They, you know. And then we had to do the deep work with each of them individually so that he felt safe being in a we. The big lesson he had, we had to get his brain safe that a we could empower him. And for her, that she could be cherished. because the we was, it was more, it was better to separate and then and not be happy about it, because in her family you would never be cherished. So when we gave her back the feeling of cherished, and we gave him back a feeling of empowered, now he can feel empowered in me, and she can feel cherished. And now, instead of pursued and distance, and all sorts of drama that ensued, now we can have two people that can separate without a lot of anxiety, without a lot of resentment, and then come together. Separate and come together. A me and a we. The most important thing in all couples is there a we? I talk about it in the book. I call it Rights of the We. Show me a couple without a we, and I'll show you a war. The key thing when I'm working with couples is I'm not actually dealing with the individuals per se, though I do. My real client is right between them, the we. And we're always finding out what keeps that we from developing, growing, and nurturing them. If we can get them safe with the experience that's blocking the we, then things change. And if you stop to think about it, a lot of people don't feel comfortable with a we, because at one time it wasn't the best deal available. But when you don't have a we, you have two me's arguing for their own interests, often at the expense of the other. And there goes trust, and there goes commitment. This we that cherishes and protects each other, that's the heart and soul of commitment.
Yeah. So when couples fight, which we all have disagreements, should the approach be the focus on we in resolution?
Well, in couple fights, yes, both have their interest, okay? But it's also true that, like, for instance, when couples come to me, there's usually almost all me and no we, with very rare exceptions.
Okay.
The first move, and when they first come, you know who the enemy is? The enemy is the other partner. You know that. And if we can just change the enemy, this marriage will get better, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's saying that. She's saying that.
Right.
Now,
that old he said, she said. Yep. Uh-huh.
Yes. Now, this is what happens. My first move is to get them to realize it's the pattern. That's the enemy. And they can be a teammate, noticing when the pattern is in the room and helping each other deal with the pattern. Now they're a we against the pattern instead of two me's against each other. That's the first move to create a we, is get them to be teammates where the partner is not the enemy, but the pattern is the enemy. And then we do deep work so that whatever is in them, if they don't feel welcomed, you know, or they don't feel embarrassed, to get them safe feeling welcomed, safe being cherished. And then we give them better skill sets. But if we don't change the feelings that they're running, it's not safe to feel cherished and be a part of the way. It's not safe reaching out for my needs and feeling worthy. That if someone doesn't feel safe reaching out for their needs, you can give them assertion tools all day long, but their brain will win. So you have to give them the feelings first. And it's deep work that's one-on-one I do with all of my clients. It's not as easy to do by yourself any more than a surgeon can do it by themselves. But we can begin noticing that this is doable change. Your brain wants it. It knows it's got a birthright to feel these feelings. And with enough, you know, just the right professional help where someone can reset these feelings, then a couple can start giving each other the good feelings, and they can become a we. And that's when love lasts.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, boy, that's a very important. Definitely stuff to consider when it comes to couple making a relationship long lasting. For people who have, you know, a broken heart, you know, that their heart has been broken many times from whatever, but they just have that difficulty in that connection to their heart. What is a good way to maybe reignite that connection.
Okay. And within couples, what I tell them is every week to check in with these four feelings, 1 to 10. So if you're out there, you can do this even now. 1 to 10, how well did we welcome each other this week? 1 to 10, how well did we make each other feel worthy? 1 to 10, how much did we make each other feel cherished and protected? And 1 to 10, how well did we make each other feel empowered with choice? Anything under 7, you want to work under, 7 or less. And this is a barometer. This is your north, south, east one. Now you know where things are getting off. And whenever there's heartbreak, ask yourself which is the feeling your heart is aching for the most. To be welcomed, to be worthy, to be cherished, or to be empowered. You know, depending on the relationship, you know, some people feel, I just want to be worthy. Others will feel, I just didn't feel cherished. That's the wound you heal. That's the feeling your brain needs to restore, that you are welcome, that you are worthy to have that feeling, to give and receive it. And you do the deep work so that you know you're worthy. You know you're cherishable, and you can feel it in your bones, and you can feel empowered. The healing of a broken heart is to restore these four feelings so you're whole again.
So obviously, you know, with couples, you can go through that, you know, 1 to 10 in each of the four areas. And if it's if it's just you yourself, you know, that you're single, but you don't have that connection, you still ask the question, which of these feelings is impacting that broken heart, and then do something to rewrite that for yourself?
Yeah. So what's your question exactly?
With couples, it's kind of, you know, easier to do the 1 to 10,
mm-hmm.
rating the four feelings, because it's, you know, you're objectively looking at, you know, the interaction between you and your partner,
mm-hmm.
or spouse. When it's just you as a single individual who feels that brokenheartedness, to heal that without having, you know, the benefit of having someone to, you know, to bounce off for perspective. Would you go through the same process? Rate. How do I feel? You know, regarding welcome or, you know, empowerment or, you know, any of those. So you would do that for yourself, rate that for yourself, and then do something in your life to bring that back into, you know.
Yes.
Like, for
well,
example,
what you do is you look through all of your relationship history. And
these,
when you have a missing right to feel worthy, it tends to show up all over the place. You say, you know, what feeling typically wasn't there? And people will usually say, I never felt worthy, or no, I was always disempowered. Usually it's clear as a bell. Look at your relationship history. What feeling or feelings have been missing? That's your deep core wound. And that's the one you have to get. You find a coach, find a therapist, and say, you know, and you have to find the exact moment that the brain said, that wasn't safe, and it pulled welcomed off the menu. It pulled empowered off the menu because it wasn't safe. And then you have to find the exact flavor of safety your brain was looking for. If you can give your brain that flavor of safety about that and restore that feeling that I am worthy, I am cherished and cherishable, then your brain will upgrade it. And once you have this feeling, once you feel empowered, you don't pick someone who dominates you. Once you feel worthy, you will not take on a taker, so to speak. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, You just, once you feel charitable, you will not put up with someone who deals mostly with contempt. You simply won't. You'll have better rights than these. And then you bring, and once you feel these are what you give to people. And then they give them back. And if they don't give them back, you know, it's okay to move on and find someone that does. But it's doing the deep work. This is not just knowing it in your brain. The book is about it, having a GPS. It's about feeling it in your core being. That's the deep work I do with clients. We go back and help them. And when they get these four core feelings, then they get what's called an earned secure attachment. You know, and they begin picking based on these feelings. All of these feelings are your four core reference feelings. Your brain refers to say, what experience am I allowed to have? What experience is survivable? And if you, and we don't want to survive and unworthy or unwelcome. We want workum. We want welcomed. We want workum. Worthy. Workum. You know. Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know
well,
what happened there.
An earned secure attachment sounds perfect. So, gosh, we're down to the end of the show, Gary. So what is it that you hope that readers are going to take away from reading Safe to Love Again?
If there's anything, the line on the back of the book is that everybody deserves a love that lasts. One that lasting love is possible, but that you deserve it. That whole, you know, these are your natural birthrights. You were born to feel welcomed and worthy and cherished. This is not something you earn. And so I want everybody to know you are worthy and enough already. And this is just changing some safety settings. Nobody's wrong. Everybody took the best deal available. We just want to give the brain a better balance. So stop making yourself wrong. And just know that when you feel these feelings, that there is real hope. So that there's real hope, and you deserve to have a love that lasts. If you got anything from the book or from our time together here with Robert and I, that's it. You deserve it. Now go out and reclaim it.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Gary, for your time. I really enjoyed this conversation. I know that the listeners have as well, and I know it's going to help me in helping my friends, too, who are going through that seeking of love again. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And if anybody wants more of them, in my website, GarySalyer.com, has videos and everything else that are more on this. But, you know, and I want to just thank you, Robert. Yeah, you've been a wonderful, gracious host, and I thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, and I do like your videos, too. So, yeah, everywhere you go, you can check out those videos. So thank you again.
You're welcome.
Everyone, again, today my very special guest has been Dr. Gary Salyer. We've been talking about his book, Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve. And again, as he mentioned, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is GarySalyer.com, GarySalyer.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.